Oh, what's the deal with my brain?
Why am I so obviously insane?
What's the deal with my brain? Why am I so obviously insane in a perfect situation?
This is Rish Outfield, and this is the Rish Outcast. It really oughtn't be. Is that a word? See, that reminds me. My grandmother used to say oughtn't, and there was another word. I don't know if it was needn't. There were a couple of those words that she used that I guess were from an earlier age, and I think of her when I hear, but it's usually in a movie set in olden time. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. This really ought to be one of those addresses that I do for my Patreon supporters, because I don't really have any set agenda. I just felt the need to talk. But let me start it out this way. I mentioned my grandmother. She was fond of folksy sayings, and one of the things that she used to say was, "I felt sorry for myself because I had no shoes until I met a man who had no legs." And when I'd bawl about, you know, my cousin ate all of the Lucky Charms and he only left honeycomb for me, she would say something like that. And later when I was a teenager, maybe not quite a teenager, I heard Johnny Carson say, I pitied myself because I had no hat until I met a man who had no head. And I thought that was the funniest thing, and I told my grandma that, because it was like what she said, only absurd, and she didn't find it amusing at all. Maybe that's the story of my life. If I were married, we could have that be the name of my book. She didn't find that amusing at all. All right, let's get into this. I have been sick forever. Good long time. I have a sister who is prone to migraines, and it depends on the time of year, but during the bad time of year, there are a couple of days every week when she is undone by migraines. She cannot function. She just has to go to bed in the dark and sleep. And I have had a couple in my life that were so, they're so debilitating that I pray to Shiva, let me die, but I do not. Now the evil of Kali take me. I mean, you probably know. I've been lucky. I usually will have a migraine every year, and maybe I skip a year when the stars align. But my sister has migraine multiples every month. I don't know. I never really appreciated the gravity of that until, gosh, how long ago was it? I'm going to say 2 weeks ago. I got a headache, and then I went to bed, and I woke up the next morning, and I still had a headache. And I have had a headache every day but one since then. You know, I considered myself an empathetic person. Too much so, in some cases. But, you know, it certainly made me, what's the word? Not appreciate her more, but I appreciate her situation more. And this may be amusing, but it's made her resent me more. She and I had an argument like the second or third day into my headache thing. And I'm still angry at her for it because, you know, I was in no mental condition. I my guard was down. It was like when somebody wakes you up in the middle of the night and you shouldn't be responsible for the things that you say. That's how I feel this was. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. Let's move on. And it wasn't a migraine. I mean, the migraines are that I have had, and I'm assuming that hers are just as bad, like even light,
everything is too bright. Everything hurts. Holding up your head, it feels like it's impossible. And so I'm lucky in that it wasn't that bad. But anyhow, I got this congestion in addition to that. And my mom thought that it was something to do with allergies. And she's probably right. But, you know, I would take headache pills and I would take allergy pills. And it would retreat. And then it would advance again. And remarkably, last week, I had something that I don't think has ever happened. I was shaving. And I hadn't shaved the whole time I had been sick. And as I shaved my neck, I discovered this big swollen patch on my throat, on my neck. And I keep wanting to say that it's my adenoid Hinkle that had swelled up. I know that that's the character from Charlie Chaplin's The Great Dictator. I know that that's what that is. But I keep thinking, my adenoid Hinkle had swelled up to bigger than the size of a silver dollar, something that you would see in a sci-fi movie. I think of Ripley and Aliens saying, you know, the alien must have laid something in Kane's throat. It is actually my lymph node, I think. And it swelled up and it was tender to the touch. And it looked really gross. And I thought, you know, okay, well, I guess the mortician is going to have to do a number on this. Maybe they just turn the coffin the other way so you can't notice that so much. And I'm in the car now and I see, and it's still swollen. It looks... It never quite got to the size of an egg, but it got big enough that I was really self-conscious about it. Now I don't think anybody would notice unless I tell them to look, but it's still really gross. Yeah, I just had this terrible congestion, and it felt like my head just weighed too much. I'd be able to take something and feel a little bit better for a while, and then I would have to lay down or take a nap. And this went on all week. And I still don't feel right. But my dad's house is still there, still is sitting above my chamber door. And I have to mow it. I have to mow the front lawn, I have to mow the back lawn, and I have to mow the weeds. And so yesterday, I hoped that I'd have enough energy, and I told my mom, yeah, I'm going to go out and I'll mow, but I'm not going to be fast. It's going to take a lot longer. Well, than it usually does. Yeah, this is not going to be a thrilling episode. I will definitely try to throw something in later on. I have something in mind, but I don't know how long this will take. So the meat and potatoes, if you will, of this episode is that I drove to my childhood home, about 45-minute drive. It seemed so far when I was a little boy, and on certain days it seems so far now. And yeah, I'm trying to remember how much detail I've gone into about this farming community. Since the last time I talked to you about it, I did look it up online, because growing up, I had a certain pride that there were 1,000 people in my town. And then a few years later, I heard, you know, it had dipped below 1,000. And so I looked, and in the 2010 census, it was at like 870. So it's not even 900 people left in the town. And my mom, I guess she sort of loathes the town. Do you remember when we did our episode about Captain Marvel? And they played all of those songs from the 90s. The I'm Just a Girl, They Won't Let Me Drive at Night, or whatever Big said the actual lyrics are. Oh, wow. And I said, it's great if you guys love those 90s songs, but it reminds me of the unhappiest years of my life. And the unhappiest years of my life were when all of my friends were falling in love. They were getting married, they were getting jobs, they were going off, starting their lives, and I wasn't. and I had roommates, and the roommates all had girlfriends, and the roommates all had things to look forward to, magic in their lives. And I know that my mom gets this sense of melancholy whenever we go to that town. There's this bend and then a straight line of a couple of miles where it's completely straight. And when I was a teenager, we would go as fast as we possibly could down that straight stretch of road. See how fast you could get the car going. It's like, oh, we got it going up to 90. It's like, oh yeah, I got 101 on that stretch. You know, it's out in the middle of nowhere. And of course, as a teenager, you think you'll live forever anyways. But when we come around that turn and my mom sees the town in the distance, she says she gets this tightness in her stomach. And it just all comes flooding back. Just how miserable she was there. And anyhow, she decided to come with me because I didn't feel well. And she said, well, I can do some weeds. Maybe I can help you with the mowing. She has offered to help with the mowing before. And yes, I have let her before. There was a time when I started the mower and I said, okay, here, you just mow for a minute. I'm going to mow the weeds. And then when I'm done with the weeds, I'll take over from where you are. And my brother found out about this and he was furious. And I understand. I do. But she wants to help. And look, here's the thing, is as long as she is physically able to contribute and she wants to, then let her to a certain point, right? I don't know. I totally understand his fury, his disgust that I let her mow. But I pitied myself because I had no hat until I met a man who had no head. So we went out there and my mom said, you know, I'll do some mowing and it'll help you get done faster, and we'll leave the town and we'll get out of here. The sooner the better. And because I had been sick, I didn't have the strength to do the front lawn and then go around to the back lawn and do the back lawn. I'm getting older and that exhausts me, doing those two things. But to also have to do the weeds and then also having been sick, I worried that I could not manage it. So she helped. The back lawn is much smaller than the front, and so I got the lightest lawnmower and I brought it out back and I started it for my mom. She's not able to pull the starter. And then I went out front and started doing the front, and it was hard. There's a ditch that runs in front of the house. It's an irrigation ditch, and I had countless hours of fun as a little boy playing in that ditch because the irrigation water would come and you can swim in it or you can try and catch fish in it. And there were, that there often are fish in the ditch. And but the point I was trying to make is the lawn goes straight down into the ditch. And so all these weeds that are watered by the irrigation, they grow up really thick and they're just right there. And it's always a little bit difficult to mow right there because you don't want the lawnmower to go into the ditch. And in this case, there was still water in the ditch. So you certainly don't want, like, you know, it to get wet. And it was hard for me to find the strength to mow at that angle and get the weeds, but control the mower enough that it didn't go into the ditch. Boy, there is a point coming, and I don't know why I'm filling all this in. See, this is the sort of thing I talk about in my Patreon addresses. I'll talk about struggles I've been having with my writing, or there was a problem with, you know, an audiobook, and I struggled with it. Or just, you know, how I've been, what's been on my mind. And I understand if it's super boring to you. But maybe it's not. I try to be interesting. I try to be engaging. And your results may vary. Oh, okay. So, and I know I've told this before, but I'm going to tell it again because it's it's nice. There are horses next door that whenever they hear me mowing the lawn, they come over because they know I will give them the grass. But recently my brother has let his friend that lives in Miller's Fork with him bring his horses to the backyard and in the pasture in the backyard and let them stay there. And he did last year as well, but this year, about 3 weeks ago, the mare gave birth to a new colt. It's a white colt, and it's kind of a beautiful animal. You know, horses are pretty magnificent, and it's surprising that when a colt is first born, it just looks like a horse. It doesn't have all the weird dimensions that a human baby does, or a monkey, or a dog, or, you know. And I go out there every week to mow, and the baby was walking, like, immediately. Like, within a day of being born, it was walking. And it seems like it's very curious, but the mother is protective. And I went out there when it was first born to look at it, and she would stand in front between me and the horse, the baby, the colt. And apparently my brother went out there one time and she kicked at him, stay away from the baby. And I'm glad that it didn't do that, because I would have, I'm not as brave as my brother is. But anyhow, I took the grass from the bag, the grass catcher, out back to the pasture where these new horses are. And they came up and I don't think they're as friendly to me as the neighbors' horses are, that are always there and have been there for years and just know me as, this is the guy that brings us grass. But I sort of felt like these are our horses. And I went out there and I dumped the grass for them, and I noticed that they had almost no water. There are three big water containers. One is the trough that we have always had there for when we had horses or cows. There's one that's just a bathtub that somebody has brought that we fill up with water, and then there's a big water container. And I noticed that they had all come close to empty, and so I started filling them and went back to mow again. And then when I filled up the grass bag again, I took it back, and I was going to change the hose to go to a different container. But what had happened was one of the horses had either bitten or knocked the hose out of the trough, and so it had just been running into the mud or the ground and making mud. And there was a big puddle there, and that was upsetting. And not upsetting, but it's irritating. So, you know, I dumped out the grass and I had to go get the hose and put it in a place where the horse wouldn't be able to knock it out. And then I went back out to the front to finish the lawn. And as I was finishing, my brother pulled up in his truck. And I was aware that my mom was in the back mowing. And I thought, well, you know, here it'll come. But he didn't say anything. I guess he said something to her, and she said, oh, he mowed the back lawn and I was just doing these little weeds here. Again, I don't want to get off topic. It's just like, she's a grown woman. Yeah, I've always had this idea of writing a story, and I've talked to you about it before, about the big snowstorm that happened the year before I moved back home, when it hit so hard that I was going to have to spend the night at Big Anklevich's house. And I always wanted to write a story where there's two brothers and they're super estranged, and the brother that is visiting for Thanksgiving is forced to spend the night because of this snowstorm, and then all hell breaks loose that night and these two brothers are sort of forced to work together. And it occurred to me that a good way for these two brothers to be estranged is something like that, that their mother, or maybe in this case their father, was elderly, and the one brother said, you know, he has to take it easy. You know, he can't do the stuff that he used to do and lay off. And the other brother, who's closer to his father, you know, I have no idea what they did. they were hauling wood together or something that the dad always did, and it's too much for the old man, and he goes to the hospital and he dies. And it seems to me like that is enough to end a friendship, to end a relationship between brothers. And so if I ever write that, I think it will be something like that, where it's just like, you know, you should have looked out for him. And the other brother is just like, he still had his dignity. He said he could do it. You know how he was. I couldn't coddle him. He was our dad. To him, I will always be 5 years old. I like that idea. Someday I would really like to write that story, but I always wanted to write it with Big and have him do the point of view of the one brother and me have the point of view of the other brother. But anyhow, yeah, my brother didn't say anything. But at one point when I finished with the front lawn and I was taking the last bag out to these horses, my mom and my brother were there, and all the horses had gathered by the fence, including the colt. And we all stood there for a few minutes and watched them and petted the horses and talked about the colt. I grabbed my phone, which doesn't work in the town, but the camera still works, and I got a couple of pictures of the colt. None of them were very good. The mother is still super protective. My brother went over the fence at one time, and yeah, the mother just put her body between my brother and the colt. And she would just sort of angle her body whenever he tried to move. And again, he's braver than I am. I don't think I would want to incur the wrath of an angry mother horse. But here we're getting to the point, which was, I was looking at these animals, and they were beautiful. And despite the mud, the puddle of mud that had been made, they were all drinking the water. They were eating the grass that I had brought them. They were standing right there, and it was me and my brother and my mom together. And as we were looking over the pasture, I saw a shadow move, and I looked up, and a hawk flew over, and it circled near to where we were, very close to us, like closer than hawks usually do. And I just thought, wow, look how close that is. Wow, that's a great looking bird. And yeah, it occurred to me that I will miss that town. I will miss that farm. I will miss that part of my life. I don't think that I will miss the weekly trips to do all the mowing. Yet, I could be wrong. Once it's gone. And yeah, holy smoke, we're going on 3 years and it still hasn't. We still haven't sold it. But once it's gone, then I can't just say, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get in. And I should have done this at some point this year, but I should have said, you know what? I'm going to jump in the car. I'm going to go down to my dad's house with like a sleeping bag. I'm going to do some editing on my computer, maybe do some writing and just be alone. And I would enjoy that. I always have that possibility. I could take my nephews out there and we could look for frogs. There's that possibility. But once the house is gone, I don't think that's still going to be there. Anyhow, I thought about that. The sun was shining. It wasn't particularly hot. It wasn't cold. The neighbor's horses came over and I could tell that they were the horse equivalent of disappointed that I hadn't brought them the grass. So I grabbed some weeds for them. I still had to mow the weeds, which is, it's not the hardest job. Well, maybe it is the hardest job. It's the dirtiest job because there's dirt that gets blown up and you got to mow up all these weeds, and sometimes there's rocks and stuff. My dad was a huge believer in going to garage sales and yard sales, and so we have 3 lawnmowers there at that house, and one of the mowers is small, very small. It's the one I started for my mom, and it doesn't have a bag to catch the grass, and it's old and rickety, crappy. and that was the mower just for the weeds. So if you ran over a rock, if you ran over barbed wire, if you ran over whatever it is, it's not the end of the world. There's the big mower with the bag that is for, you know, the main lawn. And then there's a third one for when inevitably one of the others breaks down. And there have been times when all three are going at the same time. Like my brother is mowing the weeds and I'm mowing the lawn. And oh, my brother-in-law came over one time, the three of us mowed, and it made it much faster. And yeah, it's weird. I think it's not outside the realm of possibility that I will miss having to go over every week and mow. Because mowing, in my mind, is a little bit like painting or like putting a puzzle together, where there's a starting point and there's a definite end point. You know when you are finished and you have a sense of accomplishment. You've beautified the lawn, the yard, the world. Maybe you feel that same way about other things, or maybe you feel that way about lawn care. I don't know. It's interesting. I watched that hawk circle, and this was before I'd gone in and got the phone to take pictures of the colt, so I couldn't just like raise the camera and film the hawk circling. Would have been neat, but it's just, it's not something that you get in a city or a big town that is novel. It is unusual. Another thing about the mowing that I've told you about many times is that when I go over there and do it, especially when I'm by myself and I don't have to worry about my, you know, is my mom all right in the backyard? I can just let my mind go while I'm mowing and think about writing. Think about writing stories. And last year, I remember it was around July and it was hot and I would get tired mowing both the front and the back. And so I would go inside and sit on the floor. And one time I opened my laptop and I started writing another Ben Parks story that had been piecing itself together while I was mowing. And I never finished it. And I'd still like to. And maybe when it gets hot and I can do the same thing, I bring my laptop with me. It gets hot and I mow and then I get tired and I go in. Maybe I can continue writing that, because it wasn't going to be a long piece. It was going to be a short piece, and it was going to be about Ben Parks and the deputy of Trano that doesn't like Ben. They have sort of a little adventure together. And yesterday while I was mowing, I thought of somebody comes to town and they find out that Ben is one of the Lean Rider's sidekicks. And they said, oh, did you hear about the time that a Gila monster bit Jerome Cook on the nuts? Yeah, it took that lizard 3 days to die. I thought, oh, yeah, I'm going to put that joke. I don't know if they'll say nuts or something vulgar, though. I'm going to put that joke in that story. I'm going to have somebody tell Ben that. And Ben laughs, but it's a fake laugh because he knows that Jerome Cook is dead, and that, you know, these stories that people tell about how tough the guy is, well, they're not entirely true, are they? I do really like that about the mowing, the chance to think about stories and ideas, and I repeat myself a lot, I recognize. I pity anybody who just now discovers my podcast, and they sit down and they listen to all the episodes, because they're very similar to one another, I'm sure. And I tell the same stories over and over again. But yeah, I want to be a writer. I want to write stories that people read and enjoy and look forward to. And I have all these stories that are in my head and they want to get out. And I'm my own worst enemy there. I was thinking about this week that I haven't really been able to do. I've still done some work, but I'm not going to have as much money
this week because, you know, I can't do all the stuff that I normally do. And if I were a writer and that were my job, you can write when you're sick, or you can edit when you're sick. My cousin brought a big stack of paper over for me because I had run out of paper and I was going to have to go to the store to buy a ream. And it's not like paper is that expensive, but I didn't want to do it. I'd become accustomed to not having to pay for paper. But like the first thing that I did when he brought over all this paper was I printed out a story so I could take it somewhere and mark it up, you know, do revisions on it, and then type up those revisions and record it and put it out there. And that's something that you can do even if you're sick, even if your cold or sinus infection or whatever you've got makes it so that your voice is messed up. You can still revise and still type. And there's not a ton of jobs that are like that, where it's like I'm sick, but I can still do my job. So that's pretty great. Don't you think? Childhood is a magical time. And there were a lot of really interesting things that happened in that house or around that house or in that yard when I was a kid. And a lot of who I am is because of that, because of my upbringing, because of where I grew up, I guess. I just remember always feeling too worldly and sophisticated for that town. And then when I moved to Los Angeles, I was way too backward and naive and callow for the big city. And it's just like, oh, wow, I don't know where I belong. That contributes to who I am as a writer, are the kinds of things that I write. And I was going to say, I'm okay with that. I really need to get out and get new experiences so I can find new things to write about. Travel a little bit more so I can find new locales to write about. But I could do worse. I flooded kitchen this past week. On one of the days that I didn't feel well, I started doing something and then I went and laid down and my nephews came in to tell me, oh no, what have you done? And I'd really like to write a story about that. I started writing a story. I just don't know where it's going. It'd be great if I could figure out where it was going, because it's fresh in my mind and I'd really like to write it. But boy, what was the point I was trying to make? I guess this episode is about appreciating things, appreciating your health, appreciating that little town, that house, that yard, the nature there. One of the things that was most magical to me as a child was that there were toads all over in the town. And there was a season when they would be everywhere. And I wasn't one of those kids that would blow them up with firecrackers or run them over with a lawnmower or any of those terrible things. I had too much empathy for them. I like them too much. And I remember that when I moved downstairs, they made a little bedroom for me downstairs. There was a window well. And at night in the summer, sometimes a toad would jump into the window well and it couldn't get out. And they would wake me up by jumping against the glass. You'd hear a boink. I'd be like, what? Boink. And it sounded like somebody tapping on the glass when it was really just a toad that had gotten stuck in there and was leaping about. And that happened multiple times, but I think about that and how unusual that probably sounds to somebody else. It's quaint, I guess. It's folksy, and of course you could use that in a story. I guess I'm lucky that I have had health. In the same way that, you know, my mom is lucky that she can still mow a lawn at her age, because there are people younger than her that can't. And
eventually, hopefully soon, like immediately, I will feel myself again. I'll feel fine. And I hope that I will accomplish something. Go out and do some good, or do something. It needn't necessarily be good. Thank you for listening to my podcast. I'm lucky there that I have a podcast and that people care what I have to say. I need to do more stories, that's for sure. But boy, everybody's honking their horn. I need to do more stories, yes. But I would have to write some too, right? And I will. Thank you. This has been Rish Outfield, and good night.
If you appreciate the show you have just listened to, I advise you to head on over to Patreon and support him. You can give him $1 an episode, can't you? The podcast is produced under what's known as a Creative Commons 3.0 license, in which you are free to download and share the files as you like, but you cannot change them, take credit for them, or attempt to sell them. I wouldn't take credit for them either.
Tom scrambled aboard and headed to the wheelhouse, fired up the engine, and let it idle while he checked the gauges. Tom whirled around in time to see the door to the old nursery close. Tom wiped the blood away while wrestling to control the wheel. A heavy, sweet odor mixed with rot, like dried roses masking the reek of a purulent corpse. His stomach growled and his mouth watered at the thought of the old man's breakfast. He could almost taste the sweet applewood smoked bacon. Farm eggs, sourdough pancakes smoothed in rich maple syrup. It almost feels too overwhelming to attack. Guess procrastination should be my middle name. Don't worry. Hopefully all of this will end soon. Once we figure out why she's haunting us. He raced after it, losing sight of it for a moment in the maze of gravestones, before he spotted it again, flying ahead. Shreds of ribbons from funeral wreaths. Silvery objects, gold teeth, and pendants robbed from the dead glared back at him. Tom entered the far end of the cemetery. Just a few more feet and he'd be free. Directly in his path, another corpse erupted from the... Another corpse erupted from its grave, sending chunks of wood exploding from its coffin. The thing jumped in front of him, blocking his way. A member of the recent dead. The biker had less decay. It was obviously a lot stronger than the others. Tom lurched to bolt past it when the biker grinned, flashing a gold front tooth. It fixed his eyes on him, awaiting his next move. Behind him, more zombies slogged closer, marching in a silent cadence.
I'm so sleepy. I don't know why. It's not even late. Well, it's one.
I'm not sure we should go in. It doesn't seem safe, especially at night.
Especially at night. I worry over situations that I know will be all right. It's just overkill. Day after day it reappears. Night after night my heartbeat shows my fear. Ghosts appear and fade away.
Sorry.